Good evening. So you probably saw me out on the patio with my iPhone. I forgot a piece of paper, so I was trying to bring it up, and I couldn't get it. So I have a poem to read for you that I'll have to read another time. With all due apologies to Carolyn Burke, who couldn't be with us tonight. You know, it's a hard time for us, and like all of you, I've been very sad this week. But it's really nice to see everyone. It's a really good time for us to be together. Catherine once said, you see these things on Facebook, it's kind of amazing, you know. It's like you hear it from Facebook before you see it on the Zen Center website. But many years ago, I know some of you were here, when she gave a talk called We Live in the Lives of Others. And here we are. Her death this week has been a kind of, I know it will sound trite to say a teaching, but it has, I think, snapped many of us back to this basic truth. That everything changes, everything is connected. And Natalie Goldberg actually has a third part to this, which is pay attention. And I would probably make it more like, please concentrate. So I think to begin, I want to start with other people's words as a way to kind of enter or talk about the Dharma of our lives this week, of Catherine's death. And as you know, if you had any interaction with Catherine, words were extremely important to her. It really mattered to her what the word was, how she put together lectures. She agonized over the newsletter endlessly, often, I think, in a way that would hold up the newsletter, like till the very last moment. And you know, for her, words were important because they were a way for us to hear Dharma. They weren't just literal words, but they were a means for us to help us to have a kind of everyday life with Dharma in it. So I think maybe what I'll do is I'll start first from Natalie Goldberg, who many of you know. She's visited here at the Santa Cruz Zendo before. And Natalie Goldberg was one of Katagiri Roshi's many, many students. And she's the author of a great many books, including this book, Long Quiet Highway, which actually was one of the first books I read when I came to Zen. And she describes in this book, among other things, kind of, you know, the very emotional times that she had when Katagiri died. She wasn't with him when he died. And, you know, the title of the book is she was constantly trekking from New Mexico to Minnesota. And this long, quiet highway is both a kind of metaphorical as well as a literal journey that she makes. And as you may know, or maybe don't know, Katagiri Roshi is a person who taught Catherine Introduction to Zazen. And just kind of as it happened, at the time of Catherine's death, her nephew Stephen was at a workshop with Katagiri in France. And so a lot of kind of interconnections. So this is actually from the introduction where she's kind of describing, without revealing too much, what happens in this book. And she starts in this introduction by saying that she's kind of mad at Katagiri Roshi because he, on the death of one of the members of the Sangha, said something like, we don't know when our death will come. Chris's death has come now. It's a great teaching of impermanence. And Natalie's pretty mad about this because she feels like it's a kind of flippant way to talk about someone's death. But then she says, after Katagiri Roshi dies and she's not there with him at the time, she says, this is how we learn. Human life is very big. There is no shortcut from Minneapolis to New Mexico. My car had to cover every mile. We learned with every cell and with time, care, pain, and love. I'm sure that many times when the marathon monks woke at midnight to prepare to run, they had an urge to go back to sleep, but the path was ahead of them. Some of us have this experience with morning zazen. We who are not marathon monks wake up and have the toothbrush before us, brushing our teeth, the great ritual that gets us out of bed, and then we have the blank page in front of us, or the school bus, or the phone ringing. We all must go down that highway. Our life is the path of learning to wake up before we die. So, 10 days ago, it's now 10 days, I haven't actually counted this out on my fingers as I should. Maybe it's actually 11. When I found Catherine, the plan was that she and I were going to read some Dogen. And the section that we were to finish, I have read it, and I don't really understand a thing. So I'm going to kind of mention something that we had read a month before that I think I have a little bit of understanding of. And this is from the book that's edited by Kaz Tanahashi that Catherine actually contributed to as a co-translator with Kaz. And this particular thing that I want to read is from Only a Buddha and a Buddha. And for those of you who are kind of advanced Zen students, you know that the origins of this are inspired by the Lotus Sutra. And it is basically this kind of thesis that we don't wake up alone. This is something that, you know, you don't become a Buddha by yourself. That doesn't exist. But you wake up with others. So Dogen is citing, he says, an ancient Buddha says, the entire universe is the true human body. The entire universe is the gate of liberation. The entire universe is the eye of Vairochana. The entire universe is the Dharma body of the self. And I just want to talk about this first line tonight. The entire universe is the true human body. It's such a, you know, kind of fantastic kind of thing to say. And if you think about this kind of out of the context of someone dying or out of the context or away from the context of something that appears to be extraordinary in our lives, then if you're like most people, or let's just say if you're me, I think I'm kind of like most people, pretty ordinary, but, you know, I might be deluded about that. You think this is a really nice metaphor that I can roll the words around in my mouth and I can even repeat it back to people, but what is really kind of the meaning of this? And you can kind of sink through different layers of what is the meaning of this. The entire universe is the true human body. How is really such a thing possible? The universe is out there, and this is me. And I am here. I am not Kokyo. I am not Kathy. I am not Mila. And You know, this is kind of one of the basic teachings that we, I think, grapple with continuously. We say, you know, we have this saying, we're not separate. Or try not to fall into the gap that's created by the lines of separation. These are the words, literally the words that help us understand the truth of non-duality, which is a kind of foundational precept in Buddhism. But again, you know, it seems so fantastic and so metaphorical at a time when there's great upset and grief. What do you do with this? It's a little bit like saying, well, you're a good egg. Well, you're not literally an egg, you know. You're not literally this kind of oval-shaped chicken duck thing product. And so, you know, if you kind of follow it through in your mind, you're kind of like, nice metaphor. Really, how does that help me? What have you done for me lately, metaphor? And, you know, the universe is such an enormous place. You add the black holes, the people, the rocks, the mountains, the rivers. You add the mountains and the rocks, you have to add the garbage. You have to add the kind of things that, you know, that we find less pleasing. You add all that stuff up, and is that really the true human body? Does that mean Lady Gaga is the true human body? I could go with that. Garbage? I don't know. Jerry Sandusky? Them too? All of that? Really? Is that the true human body? And one of the things I think that's difficult for us, and I just want to say logically, you know, what happens in Buddhist philosophy, in the sutras and the texts, is that, you know, our notion of what the body is obviously is not the same as what the medical profession, or what we kind of live with in sort of ordinary day-to-day life. You know, kind of in conventional medicine, we would say that the body ends at the skin, right? The limits of the body are at the skin. Or maybe if you're a little bit more new agey, then you would say, okay, well, there's a couple auras out here. And so maybe it ends there. But this idea, yeah, depending on how kind of groovy Californian you are, it could, you know, the body could even be 12 feet out. But the whole universe in that area that's 12 feet out, that's a really amazing kind of proposition. You know, in Buddhist philosophy, we have this this notion of the body as the body of Buddha as being having three different aspects: the bliss body, the truth body, and the form body. So, you know, when we do ceremonies and we say, "Let us recite the names of Buddha," like when you're eating orioki during sesshin. And you start with homage to the Dharmakaya Vairochana Buddha, homage to the Sambhogakaya Lochana Buddha, homage to the Nirmanakaya Shakyamuni Buddha. These are, on the one hand, you know, three different lines. They appear as three different Buddhas, but they are three different aspects of what, according to Dogen, comprises the true human body. So Buddhas have these three aspects. I think of, honestly, you know, up until I was reading this this section of Dogen with Catherine. Sorry, this is just the way my mind works, you know. Homage to the Sambhogakaya Lochana Buddha. That's when the servers come in. Like, if you're paying attention, that's when the servers come in and start the orioki serving of food. And so, and when we recite these names of Buddha, whether it be in Jukai or during a sesshin in Orioki, or as I think we will do when we do Catherine's funeral service, right, this Sunday, We're talking about this kind of larger cosmological vision in Buddhism about the relationship of the human body to the universe as a whole. And, you know, a week ago Monday, when the paramedics were taking Catherine and putting her on the gurney, I was at her ear, although she was not kind of conscious in the conventional way that we understand it. And I was, "Catherine, this is Dana. You're going to the hospital. I'll see you there." I was kind of blabbering, you know, "As soon as Patrick gets here, then I'm going to go." And I looked kind of expectantly at the EMT guys and said, "Think she can hear me?" And the guy says, "Absolutely not." And so I felt kind of silly, you know, like I was talking to an inanimate object, like talking to a wall or something. But I think most of us, Buddhist or not, we know better than that, right? There are too many stories, accounts, anecdotes of the way in which people are at some level conscious of what's going on. I think of the TED video of the neuroscientist who was having a stroke, and I think she appeared probably to the 911 operator and to the paramedics as incoherent. But in her mind, she was completely coherent, and when she recovered and came back, she recounted detail by detail exactly what was going on with her body. So these three bodies are a metaphorical view of how Buddhism and Buddhas appear for us, and in fact are us. According to Dogen, the Buddha body that has these three aspects, as I said, he calls this the true human body. And he says, the true human body means your own body, knowing that the entire universe is your own true body, which is not a temporary body. So, I mean, if you were to carry this kind of out, I think what this means is that, in other words, Catherine's true human body is the entire universe, which necessarily includes us. I like this idea. It helps me to kind of think about the events of this week kind of from a Dharma point of view. And all of a sudden, it's, you know, it's not metaphorical. It's very real. So although we are not often, you know, quoting from Richard Baker, I would like to read a little bit from Richard Baker. I brought this book, which is a compilation of pieces from Windbell, from the San Francisco Zen Center. Probably many of you know Catherine was an editor of the Windbell, and she brought this kind of very sharpened sense of artistry around words and the expression of Buddhist principles in ways that would be available to people who neither came at it from a scholarly bent and could apply this in their day-to-day lives. So, and also later if you want, there's this picture of this kind of batch of transmitted teachers, which includes Catherine. When would it have been? 1970? Gosh, 88? Yeah. She looks exactly the same, really, as she did last week. It's really kind of amazing. But anyway, let me go to Richard Baker here. So Richard Baker on the, you know, in our understanding of what happens when people die, ceremonially we mark certain kind of periods of time after someone dies. And so this is the 1-year anniversary of Suzuki Roshi's death. And Richard Baker is at Cindy Center, and this is, I think it's his whole lecture. You know, he goes through like these, a couple of koans and teachings, and finally he says this. He says, by coming forward in ourselves and treating him as a teacher, meaning Suzuki Roshi, we found he came forward in himself and treated our new relationship as the teacher. It felt like, and often was, a discovery of ultimate friendship. By the end of his life, many people could see him directly through his reflections in his many disciples. Our relationships with him continue, and many people can see Suzuki Roshi through us. Okay, now I can't see the page. Really bad. Our relationships with him are not gone if we continue to come forward, continue to hear with the eyes and see with the ears, if our knowing is not limited to the five categories of the senses, the seemingly seamless world they help provide. We should treat Suzuki Roshi as if he were alive. And then he goes on and he talks about kind of the ceremonies, one of which, in which you offer tea and water, which I guess we'll be doing again on Sunday. And it's just another kind of, metaphorical thing that we do in Buddhism, which is we treat that person as if they were alive. And, people get locked up for that kind of stuff. Talking to people who aren't there. But I think our relationships with Catherine are very much like this. Many people can see Catherine through all of us. And one of the things that she helped translate was, I forget the name of the fascicle, but it's the one in which she writes about mountains and rivers and how you see with your ears and listen with your eyes. And in many... And this is part of the, I think all part of the, like the way that we perceive things. It has to be part of how we understand Dharma. So when Catherine exhaled her final breaths on Sunday morning, it really was this great letting go. And for those people who were around her, even for a little bit in the hospital and at home, and as well for the members of the Sesshin, so ably and well anchored by Kokyo and Patrick, our kind of shared zazen and time with Catherine, there were different stages of breathing, and kind of in that early morning, she was working pretty hard. Her body was working pretty hard. And in that great letting go, I think some of us felt some relief on her behalf, because in the same way that you sit with someone who's dying, in the same way that we sit next to one another, there are these kind of perceptive things that are going on in which you understand, maybe not the specifics, maybe not the details, but the feeling, the affective character of struggle, suffering, and so on. And I don't want to say that Catherine was suffering any more than we all suffer. I can actually hear her scolding me about that if I were to say that. But, it was clear that the breathing was, it was hard. It was hard for her at the end. Dogen writes that birth and death is where ordinary people drift about. but great sages are liberated. So I didn't want to talk too long tonight. Let's see, where are we? Because I wanted to give other people a chance to have some words. We'll have another chance, I think, on Sunday. But I do want to end with some of her words. She chose them so carefully. And I think she did that in part because this was partly her expression of Buddhist practice. And I think she did this so that we would not rest in the literal, which is the way in which we're taught to read in school, but in the hope of true liberation. And I don't think she ever wanted us to value the clever or fancy metaphors, but it was always about helping us to cut through to deeper matter. So now I've done something. Some of you know that she has a little collection of writings called Grass Writing. And I understand that at the time of her death, she was working on a collection with Natalie Goldberg and Wendy Johnson. And so she actually, just so you know, she wouldn't exactly like what I've done here because I kind of mashed up two different lectures together. But I'm hoping that there will be some forgiveness around this. She says, these are from two talks she gave in the Zendo. I think I was here for both of them, as I think many of you probably were. And she says, recently, I have come to realize that our work is to love the world just as it is. Each moment arises as a world of echoes. A world of echoes is arising through the 10,000 things. Loving the world as it is, being willing to be in the only world we know, this is the point of practice. Thank you. David is here, one of Catherine's nephews. Stephen is still in France, and Catherine's dear friend Pamela from Pasadena is here. We've seen Pamela in the Zendo before joining us for sits, and I just thought we should have some opportunity to say things that you would like to say. So, please. Piara.
About the whole body is the body, the whole universe is the real human body. And can you find that? Do you have that list? And you said what it ended with, like dirt or something like that. And you said, could this be?
Oh, okay. So those, Dogen didn't really talk about garbage. That was my loss.
Oh, okay.
You didn't think Dogen talked about Lady Gaga, did you? It's very prescient.
Before Lady Gaga.
My list. Let's see. What did I include?
Jerry Sandusky.
Lady Gaga. Let's see. Did I have someone else?
Well, not about the people, but I just want the comment I'd like to make about that is that, you know, when you study the vessel, when you really witness the vessel, I think it's really obvious that the whole universe is the human body. It's really easy to see when you really see the vessel.
Dogen says something like, if anybody asks you about this, just tell them that the entire universe is the true human body. Reflect on this. You already know this.
And I think the entire activity of the universe is present in the vessel. And it's beautiful.
Thank you. You know, many, many years ago, right after 9/11, Catherine gave a talk about the bombings of the Twin Towers. And that sort of started a series of lectures about politics and foreign policy. Obviously, they're not called, you know, Dharma foreign policy. But I remember one lecture, she said something like, can you actually have sufficient compassion? Can you open your heart wide enough to have compassion for George Bush? And you could see all these people going, no, nope, I am not going to go there. But it is part of the practice that all of the universe, including us and George Bush, are the two human bodies.
And the bombers.
And the bombers. That's right. That's right. That's right. Kathy.
I came this morning to help, well, not help, but to just participate with her leaving her home. And I hadn't seen all of the pictures that were out because I had been there 2 days ago and there hadn't been so many pictures. But there was like these pictures of her when she was a little girl with her sister. Somehow I missed it. I don't know what was going on that I didn't see them, but I just saw them this morning. And that was just so haunting for me, you know, just that there it was, you know, there's this little person, this little eager-eyed, black-haired, you know, little girl. And I just kept looking at her and like, oh, you're the little girl who grew up to be Catherine, you know? And then there was her dead body lying in the field of flowers, looking like it was just part of the field of flowers. And just the whole, again, just the whole teaching of the world and all of our, you know, that's all of our path.
Yeah.
We've all been a little child, and that little child shows up even as we're adults. And we're all going to be lying there in our fields of flowers.
We should be so lucky that we have an entire sangha around us, but yes.
Well, I was thinking community, you know? Community is a pretty far out thing, you know? You put yourself in community, and you're not alone. And even though I appreciated your words when you said that you had experienced that she was one, I think you said at one of our ceremonies.
I did.
I also felt that, and she knew, and she knew, she was in the circle.
Thank you. You know, I think many of us knew Catherine as a teacher. We were her students, and I think she worked very hard to keep appropriate boundaries with us. And I think as she kind of grew into being a teacher here, a lot of us have had very kind of individual, very intimate kinds of friendships with her. Not the kinds of friendships I think that she reserved for Pamela or Rosie or Tina, other people in her life, but as far as she could go with us, she would go. And very struck by, as people talked about the last time they saw her, which was, you know, the previous week, or they had gone to the market with her, or they had driven her someplace. And she was very available. I'll just say this one thing, since I don't think I can say it. I want to say this on Sunday. And that is one night after a Dharma talk, I took her to see Harry Belafonte. She loves Harry Belafonte. And it happened that this research center that I worked with had tickets. And so we got right up at the front. And she didn't bring a change of clothes, so she went in her robes. And she kept saying, do you think this is okay? And I was kind of like, it is what it is. It kind of looks like a black dress. And she really liked music. And it was just kind of one of those moments where she stepped a little bit outside of the box of teacher. And I think lots of people have stories like that, doing things with her, visiting with her. And I think in some ways, you know, Richard Baker describes Suzuki Roshi as kind of nothing special, someone who just kind of seemed like one of those many Japanese priests in Japantown. But that, as they got to know him, this kind of stepping forward on both sides produced both Dharma teacher and Zen students in a very, very sweet way. Oh, sorry, Patrick.
Well, the 22, 23 years that she was here before you, she certainly filled up the Zen Center. I mean, this really was the whole life between here and Monterey. We all benefit from that. Diligence. And so in the, you know, all we really have to believe is that the human body, or the true human body, doesn't just stop with the skin. And I don't think, I mean, that Catherine metaphorically goes with the skin. She's really good. And once you can agree to that Catherine filled the place beyond her body, then it is, of course, the means that the whole universe is our body. And that was, we can certainly see that in the not ourselves, but we can see how completely she filled up.
Yeah. Thank you. Maybe out on the patio over tea, we can do a little bit more visiting, exchange stories. May the entire universe is a true human body. May any merit that we derive from being together tonight, from this teaching, be part of our vow to love the world as it is, with all of its echoes. And if you would like, although it's not our typical practice on a Wednesday night, please join me in prostrations when I go to the bowing mat. Beings are numberless, I vow to save them.